So now let's understand. We have studied the four P's of international marketing, and we will now study the role of PEST analysis. That's a framework that is generally used to assess the international marketing environment. So environment, when you talk, you have an external environment which is outside your control. You cannot drive any aspect of it. Internal environment or the internal factors are within your control. Price, controlling the cost, controlling manpower, it's under your control. So PEST analysis or the PEST framework refers to external factors. You are trying to understand overall environment of that country. So it has a PEST stands for political, economic, social and technological factors. So we will study them one by one. Political factors, when you say political factors, means how the politics determines the trade regulation. So there are government has certain policies which are designed keeping the overall interest of the country in mind. Accordingly, they will decide the trade agreements. Stability is another thing, like your government has to be stable. So now, as you know, that current BJP government has entered the third term. So the policies they have framed got that stability. So all those things matter. How is the operation there? Whether there are too much of a trade unionism or there is a restricted, you know, bottlenecks in terms of organization running, etc. So you see that we all are experiencing. I am talking about current, you know, various pursuit that is happening, current war ongoing between various parts of the country. So here US and China are at a trade war because of China kind of dumping steel, and US economy is getting affected, and other market for that matter also. Another one is the European Union came out with the General Data Protection Regulation, that is GDPR, which governs how the international data, where it can be stored, safety, security. Like India has its own such rule where India says that India's data or Indians' data should be stored in India. So that restricts certain aspects, okay? Economic factors like growth, whether we are growing, the fastest growing economy, 6.5% GDP growth rate. Others are just 2 to 3%. Currency, our currency is that way devalued. You know, we do not get higher dollar per hundred or thousands of rupees that we give. So that's our rupees weaker for that matter. So we have to pay more to buy $1, in other words. So economic factors, if you see, then it is things like our consumer spending. So they should have a surplus income, disposable income, as we say. What is their sensitivity to the pricing? What is the market feasibility? Is there a demand supply gap? Countries with high inflation, which is another one. Inflation is a term I can go on, but essentially is at what are the few aspects which jacks up the price, you know? So that's what generally the inflation. Now that requires you to constantly adjust price. When inflation go up, your purchasing power go down. Now that requires you to adjust the price. Every country around the world is nowadays attracted by India's middle class and their growth, you know, possibilities. Currency fluctuation impacts your profitability. So that also is a very important economic factor. Coming to social and cultural considerations, you have to really understand your consumer behavior in that country, the tradition that they follow. It is very vital. So like, for example, Nike promotes female athletes in Western market. They have even succeeded in India, because India also now the mindset has opened, you know, showing female running, jogging with the various kinds of that, you know, athletic dresses, etc. But Nike has to withdraw in Middle East. They were debarred. So that's how. So this is how the cultural aspects do determine. Language barrier, miscommunication may happen. Another example, like earlier I told you that Pepsi has to come alive, campaign has to be withdrawn. Here Chevrolet as Nova car failed in Latin America, because in Latin America, Nova means doesn't go. So how you see that things changed, you know? So last aspect of PEST is the technology, which is talking about the advancement, the digitalization, etc. In India, many foreign countries entered only after India introduced 5G. So that's why, because their business is more about video, their business is more about rapid communication. If that technology is not there, that business cannot talk to the consumer. Therefore, they prefer to wait. So likewise, now AI is dominating. So AI helps you into various personalization. You feel like as if the company is talking to you. Netflix, they study my kind of a program that I, you know, watch. They study my preferences and then starts recommending that. Spotify tailors content recommendation. Amazon content recommendation. All this is possible due to technology, but it supports personalization in marketing. That has become possible now due to technological things. So let's understand how McDonald's successfully maneuvers the pest analysis, uses it and maneuvers it. Political, it closed Russian outlets due to too much of a geopolitical tensions, interferences, etc. Economy-wise, it offers value meals in low-income countries, okay? But premium burgers in high-income nation, Big Mac. So likewise, social, it removes beef from menus across India and adapts to halal food requirements in Middle East. That is, that country is, that is a rule, you know. Technologically, it invests itself into self-servicing kiosk. Now they have done so much of investment in that, that you don't have to be in a line. You can order through your mobile, be at the shop and collect your item, or order and then receive item and eat within the restaurants. Various things they have done it so that consumer experience overall becomes superior. So using the 4 P's and pest analysis together, they were able to not only customize the product, affect the pricing, distribution, promotion, etc. And they very well watch political developments. They very well have certain economic criteria understood, social and technological factors. They constantly evaluate to determine opportunity and threat perception both. So after seeing that, let's understand emerging markets and their growing importance in international marketing. Because that will give you an idea as to how this is changing the global landscape. Now, today the emerging markets are recognized as China, India, Brazil, Indonesia, and South Africa. All are, other than China, all others are developing countries, still classified as that. Okay. Now, what is changing there? Rapid growth in GDP. India itself, you take 6.5% since last so many years. Urbanization. People are coming, not only people are coming to select few cities, but infrastructure that has been provided, even in tier A, tier 2 towns, they are growing. So their urbanization is taking place. Disposable incomes are growing. The kind of bonuses, the kind of performance allowances, etc. that is offered to them. So if they perform, so by and large, it is believed that we have an extra disposable income. Digital transformation, we have adopted to every technology very rapidly. So that's where Indians are at a forefront. UPI, India is today giving that technology to the world. Okay. So by 2050, emerging markets are expected to contribute over 50% of global GDP. So this is what we are going to make a difference across the global economy. So India and China alone accounts for 40% of global economic expansion. So you see that emerging markets are playing and going to play a very decisive role. And as a result, despite power, large developed countries are also thinking twice before hitting at countries like China, India, etc. Okay. So economic growth and rising consumption. So that is the first thing that is happening. India is projected to become a third largest economy by 2030. We are already at 2025, we are already fourth largest. Okay, across ASEAN region, which is a group of countries, Vietnam, Indonesia, Philippines are emerging as a manufacturing hub. Even India is, Make in India wants to be one, and we will sure because the kind of FDI is coming in, foreign direct investment. The second is digital and financial inclusion. So, as I told you, digitalization. Technology is being offered across. You see the banking system. Even a tea vendor accepts your Paytm or Google Pay based transaction. So this is making things so easy. You don't have to really carry your wallet. smartphone, internet makes the e-commerce, mobile banking possible. Look at the infrastructure and urbanization. China has gone and their BRI project is going to cover so many countries. You know, they are going to get connected. So you look at this impact on the trade. India Smart City Mission, you know, which is driving urban mobilization. So they are developing country other than original developed cities, other cities as a smart city, so that those city also, the people in and around that area will get a boost, the economy and various things. Opportunities in this emerging market, middle class is really expanding, their disposable income is expanding. The global middle class is expected to be adding about 1.5 billion people by 2030, with most coming from the emerging markets. I have already given you those countries' name, including India. Premiumization trends are very evident. Even we as a common middle class wants to have some high-end item. So it has been realized that even middle class is considering buying a quality and high-end item. So that's why various efforts are made to do premiumization of your existing product. Second is localized and affordable product offerings. Efforts are also on. One sect of middle class is preferring premiumization. Another set of middle class is looking at affordable products. So Sunsilk has adopted its shampoo to suit the regional types. You know, Southeast Asia, they have different composition versus India, where there is also a mix of hard water, soft water. Tesla has introduced more affordable model in three variants in China. So that China, being very large country, disparity of income is so wide. So they want to don't want to miss out on opportunities. So they offered three variants, which they are otherwise not offering in other countries. Rise of digital commerce and social media, we have kind of discussed, so to say. Challenges and risk in this emerging markets. Regularity and political uncertainty. These countries are undergoing change. As a result, even the laws are getting changed. India has implemented new laws, legal laws. India has implemented new IT laws. So this is going to be faced by the foreign counterparts. Okay. Political uncertainty is always there in such changing economies or in emerging economies. Price sensitivity and counterfeit markets. Because legal and implementation of legal rules are little lax, counterfeit market is very large. And counterfeit is large because large part of the world wants to have a cheaper product. They want same, you know, Louis Vuitton bag, but they want it 500 rupees. So you see counterfeits go on. Infrastructure gaps and supply chain issues, like weak logistics network. Still, India has that challenge despite so much of concretization of the road has happened. Power supply, which is now, I think, slowly going to go behind us. And transportation inefficiency, that is the operation of a truck and vehicle, still remains a concern. So that is a gap that we need to really face. And culture and consumer behavior differences. Already told you that beef is not served in India. So these are the challenges that the international marketer has to face in different countries. So how global brands are adopting to this emerging markets? So Starbucks success in China, we have discussed already. So they've introduced green tea and variants thereof, created premium cafe experience, which is positioning itself as a luxury lifestyle brand rather than the fast food chain. So they've differentiated itself. Like, we are a class apart. Okay. So we are not selling coffee. We are selling experience. So this is how Starbucks has managed. Partner with Alibaba. In China, they partnered with Alibaba to integrate online delivery, making it easier for Chinese consumers to order coffee through Alibaba and get it from Starbucks. This strategy has helped them to set up over 6,000 outlets in China, across China, and it is profitably running. So this is what is the significance that this example gives us. So now, going forward, defining the scope of international marketing. As we say, there has to be a scope of everything. So what international marketing scope is all about? Global market expansion facing the trade regulation. So international marketing has to definitely take into account trade agreements, the barrier put in by various countries, legal compliances, cross-cultural consumer behavior in and market adaptation. So there is that framework called Hofstede. Studying that, you can really look at what is the power distance, individualism versus collectivism, what is the uncertainty avoidance. Indians want to avoid uncertainty, while in Western country it is recognized that they are risk takers. So likewise, Germany prefers informative, direct advertising, okay, while Japanese value indirect relationship-based communication. So all this aspect has to be taken into account. So here is, that's a Hofstede model. Not that we have to learn this completely. You have to understand essentially the impact of culture in the international marketing. This framework gives you the study on this six parameters. Power distance, that is whether the society is equal or not equal, male, female also. Collectivism versus individualism, so that is, I think, self-explanatory. Uncertainty, I have already discussed. Feminine versus masculinity, who gets more power? Okay, India is still masculine, but lot of liberties have happened. So feminine, this thing is growing. A long-term orientation or a short-term orientation? Indians earlier, our forefathers have thought long-term. Now, current new age or the age before, like probably me, was up to middle age. The new age is not really thinking long-term. So that's a change that has happened. Considering all these things, you know, restraining or an indulgence society, considering all these things, how will you manage the cultural distance when you enter that country? So that's where the cross-culture consumer behavior and market adaptation comes into picture. It will help you to decide whether you need to do localized branding, whether you need to do any product adaptation, whether you need to do any marketing communication adaptations. So as discussed, McDonald's has really Indianized their menu. McSpicy paneer, teriyaki burger in Japan. So that's how they are taking this to their advantage. Marketing communication challenges. Unilever adjusts advertising visuals in different regions. Their overall message or the thematization may be same, but they adjust visuals, okay, to align with the cultural and diversity and the societal norms. So depicting family-centric imagery in India and modern independent lifestyle across Europe. So there they will not show family, this thing, you know, there they will show each individual enjoying Mac. So likewise, digital transformation in e-commerce in international markets. So all this thing is changing the way people consume things, okay? Market entry strategies and global branding. So whether there are many strategies, we'll be studying around as we move forward. So whether I will export directly but produce here, or can I consider local production in that country itself? So Apple, like for example, assembles phone in China and also now in India, but exports around the world. Nestle establishes local manufacturing units. As against this, Nestle, because of the product nature and by virtue of their strategy, whichever country they are, the manufacturing hub also will be there. So that's their market entry strategy. Another one is franchising and licensing. So here, franchising is like KFC and Subway expanded through franchisees. So here, you are given a brand usage right, but marketing, etc., remains under your control, okay, but following the guideline, following identity standards, etc. While licensing is like Disney licenses their characteristics to be used by various merchandise partner world over, okay. So they take certain one-time fee and give a right of using Mickey Mouse, and that user can then, it is up to him to use and make money out of it. Joint ventures and strategic alliances, where Starbucks has, for example, partnered with Tata in India. So there will be like 49-51% kind of partnership, and that gives you the access to various advantages. Okay, knowledge of the market, the infrastructure, etc. Toyota and Suzuki collaborated on hybrid vehicle. Each leverages other's strength. So joint venture, strategic alliances enables, you know, mutual utilization of strengths and defending against the weaknesses. So now we are entering into a very powerful framework called EPRG model. This is very important to understand across international marketing, those who are studying that. Ethnocentric, polycentric, regiocentric, and geocentric model, EPRG. So here is a diagrammatic representation where ethnocentric, polycentric, geocentric are all together different approach. Geocentric is a unified approach, therefore it is shown in the side. So now we will get into understanding each one of them. Ethnocentric approach means, or ethnocentric orientation means, home country is your base. Various values, the business practices, strategy that is predominantly used in home country, same will be applied in the international operations. Companies view foreign market as just an extension of the domestic market. So that's a ethnocentric orientation. So just to give you an example, India Gate Basmati rice is sold across 90 countries. But they've not localized the basmati. It goes from here to Dubai, to Middle East, to Europe, etc. The communication also, because they know it's an Indian consumer whom they are appealing. So they don't have to do much. Various things which they do it here are straight away applied in the international market. So how does it help? Companies applying the same marketing mix with very minimal adaptation. So you really do not incur substantial cost. The primary advantage is therefore the cost efficiency, and you avoid reinventing new things, including strategies. However, one limiting factor is it leads to lack of responsiveness to the local preferences. Means this requires you fundamentally not look at the local preferences, okay, which may limit your success in some very culturally distinct regions. But this is also a successful strategy. Many companies are using it. Second is the polycentric orientation. Here you acknowledge that the different markets have unique characteristics. So you realize that, and leading firms to develop customized strategy for each country. So it is opposite to ethnocentric orientation. Unilever, sachet versus premium grade products. So Unilever, depending on the country, does have sachet also in India, but it is not there in certain other part of the world. Where they pack it also, the packaging is different, you know, in other certain part of the world, where right from packaging, people look at your premiumness. So they offer varied nature of packaging in certain part of the country. So this is what is polycentric. Unlike ethnocentric, it allows subsidiary company of yours to create a different perspective about the brand and the product, and can operate independently by adapting themselves to the market, local market, on all four P's. This approach enhances consumer acceptance. So you will find an acceptance among the consumer, but you will have to customize everything. So that's a cost of adaptation, okay, duplication of effort. And you will have to decentralize your decision making. Thereby, you do create some risk on the business. The third is regiocentric orientation. Here, regional perspective, bit of a macro level perspective is taken, where certain group of countries considered as one region, so European Union, so to say, is considered as a kind of a regiocentric orientation. The approach is like similar characteristics based multiple market is put under one region. Okay, so then you have to only focus on developing a region specific strategy, not a country specific necessarily. Toyota product strategies for North America, Europe, and South Pacific, Asia Pacific is quite different. So they focus in overall aspect of the region. Here in those, you know, South Asia Pacific people have kind of many similar characteristics. So one, European market, North America, different characteristics and profile of individuals. So this balances cost efficiency and local responsiveness. So you get an advantage of both, because you are able to standardize certain aspects and you are able to just focus on certain things that you need to localize. Okay, so you are getting flexibility of a varied nature. You are able to tweak your market appropriately. The fourth orientation is a geocentric orientation. Here, entire world has to be considered as one market, and therefore your strategy and product and everything has to have a unification. Here, company deciding to adopt this particular approach will have to standardize product and marketing campaign in such a way that it appeals to the target audience worldwide. This approach naturally builds the brand consistency, and therefore on the other end it gives you the operational efficiency, because economies of scale is possible and minor tweaks are always possible, not on the product side at all, but on the communication and all. So you don't really disproportionately spend higher costs. So that's where it gives you a lot of operational efficiency. So Apple follows this geocentric model by offering standardized product worldwide. So as I was telling you, we have studied EPRG framework, which is your strategy framework. Every company has to decide one of this when they plan their entry into international market. As you progress, maybe over or after a year, few years, you may consider change, but essentially on the entry side, first you have to be very careful and clear about whether it is E, P, R or G approach, orientation that you are going to take. So now in the future of international market, very quickly we will see that entire technology advancement is sweeping, especially the AI, artificial intelligence. As a result, digital transformation is taking place. So blockchain, big data, all this thing that we are hearing is in the back end definitely impacting the way business is done. Okay, so AI power analytics understands consumer behavior. So that is applied even in the marketing management, so that predictability comes. Digital marketing, you are now able to do a programmatic. You may not be know available, but there's a various software available called as MarkTech, where various things can be automated and hyper personalized. Therefore, you feel like as if the company is interacting with you. So that's the power of technology. Consumer preference is therefore changing. Market is becoming more dynamics. Growing demand for sustainable and ethically produced goods. So consumer wants to know what is your stand, and therefore they go away if you do not really make sustainable product, do not have ethicality in your business practices, etc. Rise of regional trade agreements and emerging markets. So for example, recent past, BRICS is a local body of certain nations. Now, threatened by that, United States has declared that if BRICS does anything which impacts their business, they will have countermeasures taken. So that's what is a local regional trade agreements are growing. Instead of now early days of common unified global trade practices, now more and more regional aspects are coming. You have to definitely balance between localization with globalization. No doubt people are getting more globalized as we talk about global village, but every time some localization is required. So thank you. With this, we complete chapter 1.